Chapter 48. There was an urgent summons from Aitchison awaiting for Sean. He caught the northbound express 20 minutes after arriving in Charlestown, hating Saul for the hot bath in which he left him, and for the uniform which Imbijani had persuaded a plump Zulu maid to wash and iron, hating him still more venomously for the invitation to be guest of honour at the officers' mess that night, and knowing that Saul would drink deep on Veuve Clicquot and Courvoisier, which had once belonged to Sean. When Sean arrived in Johannesburg the following morning, with soot from the locomotive adding a subtle touch to the fragrance he had gathered from 2 unwashed weeks in the veld, there was an orderly to meet him and conduct him to Aitchison's suite in the Grand National Hotel. Major Peterson was patently taken aback by Sean's turnout. He eyed the stains and tears and dried mud with genteel horror at the contrast they afforded to the breakfast table's crisp white linen and splendid silver. The ripeness of Sean's odour impaired Peterson's appetite, and he dabbed at his nose with a silk handkerchief. But Aitchison seemed not to notice. He was in festive mood. "Damn fine show, Courtney. Oh, damn fine. Proved your point entirely. We'll not have much trouble from LaRue for some time, I warrant you. Have another egg. Peterson, pass him the bacon." Sean finished eating and filled his coffee cup before he made his request. "I want to be relieved of this command. I made a bloody mess of it." Both Aitchison and Peterson stared in horror. "Good God, Courtney, you've achieved a notable success. The most spectacular in months." "Luck," brusquely Sean interrupted. "Another 2 hours and we would have been wiped out." "Lucky officers are more valuable to me than clever ones. Your request is refused, Colonel Courtney." "So it's Colonel now. A bribe to get me into the dentist's chair." Sean was mildly amused. A knock at the door prevented Sean continuing his protestation, and an orderly came into the room and handed Aitchison a message. "Urgent dispatch from Charlestown," he whispered. Aitchison took the paper from him and used it like a conductor's baton as he went on talking. "I've got 3 junior officers for you, men to replace your losses. You catch them for us and hold them for my cavalry. That's all I want you to do. While you're doing your bit, the columns are going to start a series of new drives. This time we are going to sweep every inch of the ground between the blockhouse lines. We are going to destroy the crops and the livestock, burn the farms, take every woman, man and child off the land, and put them in detainment camps. By the time we're finished, there will be nothing but bare felt out there. We will force them to operate in a vacuum, while we wear them down with a relentless series of drives and raids." Aitchison slapped the table so that the crockery jingled. "Attrition, Courtney. From now on, it's a war of attrition." Those words had an uncomfortable familiarity for Sean, and suddenly a picture of desolation formed in his mind. He saw the land, his land, blackened with fire, and the roofless homesteads standing in the wastes. The sound of the empty winds across the land was the wailing of orphans and the protest of a lost people. "General Aitchison," he began, but Aitchison was reading the dispatch. "Damn," he snapped, "damn and blast LaRue again. He doubled back and caught the transport column of those same lancers who cut him up, wiped it out and disappeared into the mountains." Aitchison laid the message on the table in front of him and stared at it. "Courtney," he said, "go back, and this time, catch him."